This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
By the way, Todd, on the category of, let's make sure we're right here, you are correct. Fargo's 130,000. So you were right about that. Just want to make sure we got it right. Talking about North Dakota State. This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day, pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Hall of Famer Ray Dininger now joins us. Ray, first of all, how have you been?
Just fine, Steve. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Interesting game yesterday. After what happened at the end of the Atlanta game, anything that you see defensively as to how the Eagles approached it that made a difference against a New Orleans team that had been scoring at will the first 2 weeks?
Yeah, it was quite a turnaround, wasn't it? I mean, after anybody that saw the game Monday night, that the Eagles basically gave away to the Atlanta Falcons and all the problems that they were having on defense there. No pass rush, couldn't stop the run. Basically looked inept defensively. And then they got to go down to New Orleans and play a Saints team that was red hot for 2 weeks. It looked like about as bad a matchup as you could imagine. But they went down there and played really good. I mean, you got to give a tremendous amount of credit to Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator, who really obviously spent, he probably didn't sleep a wink all week. I mean, he was probably up all night looking at the tape of the Saints' two games, and the conclusion he came to was, we got to stop the run. Because everything they had done, even though Derek Carr had played very well through 2 weeks, the whole passing game, the whole offense was working off of the run. The run set up everything else. Mm-hmm. So Vic knew that to have any chance in this game, they had to stop the run first. And so he basically went with a five-man line.
This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers.
Pretty much the whole game, and he brought the two off-ball linebackers, N'Kobe Dean and Bruin, up. Yeah, he brought them up. He played them tight to the line, so they were almost playing seven-man. They're almost playing seven-man up, and. That's put a lot of pressure on the secondary, but they did succeed in stopping the run. And once they stopped the run, then that whole offense sort of bogged down. So, great work by Fangio coming up with the scheme. And then the other part of it was his defensive players really rose to the occasion. I mean, they missed so many tackles. I mean, they had to set the world record for missed tackles in the Atlanta game, and they didn't miss many. And they didn't miss many yesterday. And it was the best game that Jalen Carter had played in a very long time.
How much do you think Carter was helped by mostly getting one-on-one matchups because essentially the Eagles were playing a seven-man front?
Helped a lot, and I think they might have to do more of that kind of stuff because he's been – I mean, everybody knows that he's the best. He's the real difference maker on that defensive line. I mean, he's the guy that can wreck a game plan pretty much by himself. Mm-hmm. That's why they drafted him when they did. And for half a season last year, he looked like it. I mean, in mid-season last year, I mean, he was everybody's pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year. And then the second half of the year, his play really tailed off. And at the start of this year, the first two games, he really was almost invisible. But boy, he took over yesterday's game. And you're right, when they go five man up front, it gets him a lot of one-on-ones. And sometimes by design, they can put they can put Davis over the center to get the double team, and they could slide Carter out to a position which is more or less of a three technique, where he can play in the gap, and he's also very effective. But he's got that kind of talent. I mean, he has the ability, and everybody knew this. He has the ability to be a really dominant player in the defensive line, and for this team to be really good, he has to be.
What have you thought of the rookie, Quinyon Mitchell, at corner to this point?
Very good, but not surprising. I mean, I had, going into the draft, after watching a lot of college football last year, then watching the postseason bowl games, and then seeing the Senior Bowl, he was the guy that I circled as the guy. I said, this is the guy I think the Eagles need. This is the guy that I want the Eagles to get. Yeah, I mean, that was how I felt about it. I know there was some concern about the fact he was coming from a relatively small college program. I mean, Toledo, level of competition. But, I mean, once he got to the Senior Bowl and was playing against the best guys, I mean, you saw that he could cover them too. Mm-hmm. So I thought that he was, for a team that was desperately in need of talented players on the back end, I thought he was the best of that crop. Now, the thing that surprised me, Steve, was, having said that, going into the draft, I thought, well, I think he's the guy, but they're not going to get him at 22. I mean, if they want right. him, they're probably going to have to trade up to, 10, 12, somewhere up there to get him. But they were lucky because everybody was picking offensive players. Everybody was running for quarterbacks. So, lo and behold, he falls right in your lap at 22. So, good for the Eagles. I mean, they come away with a player who, I think is going to be a long-term starter for them, and already just through three games has shown you that he belongs.
And then the acquisition on offense, I mean, I feel like in a lot of ways Saquon Barkley bailed out the whole deal yesterday with how he played. What have been your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I felt when they made the deal for him, which frankly surprised me, because the Eagles have never been a team that put a whole lot of stock in running backs. I mean, they sort of bought into the conventional NFL wisdom that you don't spend a whole lot of money at the running back position. Running backs are kind of interchangeable, and that's where you find those guys in the third, fourth, fifth round. You sign them for one contract, then you let them go. But I mean, there are certain players who are special and are a lot better than that. And I felt that Barkley was that. And when the Eagles made the move to go get him, it was pretty bold. And a lot of people here were surprised. But I thought, I said right away, this guy's going to come in here and he's going to be really good. I mean, he's going to change the face of this offense. I mean, you put him on the field with some of these other weapons that you've got, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert, those types of players, and you put him out there in the backfield with Jalen Hurts, that's a defensive coordinator's nightmare. And he has been, right from the start, I mean, all through training camp, not that he played a lot in the preseason games, but you just saw it. I mean, you just saw how good he was, how instinctive he was, how fast he was for a big man. And, I mean, all the coaches knew that once we get him saddled up and ready to go in the regular season, he's going to make us a different football team, and he has.
Talked about the value of running backs. So many teams are playing cover two right now, which invites you to run the football. What has been your thought about scoring being down, a lot of field goals, and how to beat cover two?
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, you kind of answered your own question right there. I mean, that's, everybody's saying, gee, look at scoring. It's down, an average of 7 points a game, which is a lot, I mean, given where scoring was for a long time. But that's why. I mean, it's this whole philosophy. And even teams that really want to throw the ball, I mean, teams that are built to throw the ball, even they're running it more. Because if defenses are playing the cover two, if defenses are playing the two high safeties all the time, which pretty much everybody is, then the way you get them out of it is to run the ball. If they're going to play the two safeties deep, then they're light in the box. And if they're light in the box, it gives us a chance to run. And even if we want to throw, even if that's really what we want to do, we're going to have to run the ball some to get that one of those safeties out of there and allow us to do what we want to do, which is throw the ball. You're going to have certain teams that just flat, they want to run. I mean, there's some teams that are built to run. That's their philosophy. That's what they want to do. But even the teams that want to throw the ball are going to have to run more than they would ordinarily to try and force defenses to bring one of those safeties down. That's what you got going on now. And I know a lot of people are unhappy with it. I know the people in the league office don't like it because they like points. They like wide open football. They like points. You know, they think it's more entertaining. It makes the fantasy people happier if there's a lot of offense. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, most of your defensive coordinators have just taken the philosophy, look, we're not giving up the explosive play. We're just not going to do it, and we're going to keep the two safeties high. We're going to keep everything in front of us, and that's the type of defense we're going to play, and it's going to keep us in the game. And so the offenses are going to have to come up with something else to do with it, deal with it, and what they're coming back with is the old-fashioned, good old run the rock.
Yeah, run the rock, because and I'll deliver an opinion here. I think there are three reasons why we're seeing it. One, cover two has been effective. Number two, there aren't enough quality quarterbacks in the league. In other words, if you have a quality quarterback, you've got a gem. And number three, the offensive lines aren't giving them time to develop deeper plays because pass protection-wise, they aren't good enough. That's just my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's – I can't argue with any of that, Steve. I think that's pretty true. And, you know, one of the real storylines that's developing around the league now is the plight of the young quarterbacks and seeing what's happening to the young quarterbacks. I mean, what's happened to Bryce Young already? Mm-hmm. I mean, the number one pick has been benched two games into his second year. Mm-hmm. And you look around the league now, you know, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix and all these guys. I mean, you had six quarterbacks taken in the first round of the draft this year. He had six. Here you are 3 weeks into the season. They have combined for zero touchdown passes. Mm-hmm. Now, three of them haven't played, but the three that have played have thrown 196 combined passes, and not one of them has thrown for a touchdown yet.
Yeah, that says it all. All right. Now let's get to Nick Sirianni. At some point, he had to talk about what he has and hasn't been doing. On the broadcast yesterday, Joe Davis, and they obviously got this from Sirianni, they want to recapture their mojo from 2 years ago as to how they attack fourth downs and so forth and be successful with them. Okay. Like anything, when you're successful with it, the world loves you. When you are not successful with it, the world suddenly forgets to love you. Well, they haven't been successful with it as often as they were before. How do you view it, especially because I view it on time, score, and situation, and I think he's determined to do it whether it's square peg, round hole, and not on time, score, and situation. You may have a completely different view.
No, I agree with you, and it's one of the problems with the whole analytics cult of people is that
yes.
they sort of view every situation as the same. You know, that the same down and distance metric on a certain field position is the same for the Carolina Panthers and the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, it's just in this situation right here, you go for it. Well, maybe some teams do, but not necessarily every team. You have to go by what your team is doing, what your team's capable of, who your opponent is, home or away. Whether, I mean, all of that stuff factors into it. It's all the football stuff. It's all the stuff that coaches have been factoring in to their decision making for 100 years. Going back to Amos Alonzo Stagg, that part hasn't changed. What's changed is you have a whole bunch of people with slide rules up in the press box that are telling you, No, in this situation, no, you don't kick the field goal. You go for it. And, you know, sometimes that's right, but sometimes it's wrong. Now, one of the things about what makes Philadelphia a bit of a unique situation is Philadelphia is the home of the Philly special. The ultimate against all odds fourth down gamble in a Super Bowl that helped you become a world champion. Mm-hmm. So everybody here is a little bit more inclined to have that go for it on fourth down mentality. Not that Nick Sirianni was a part of it, but he's kind of inherited it. And he had some success with it last year. Certainly the push thing that they had on fourth down was almost unstoppable, which gave them a weapon that nobody else had. But now he's carried it over into this season where they aren't quite the same team. They aren't built to have the same kind of success without Kelce snapping the ball. And yet he's still making the same kinds of decisions, and he's made some that just had me just scratching my head saying, what are you thinking? I mean, just to isolate one was the one right before halftime.
Yes.
In a 3-0 game, you know, you got the ball down, you're inside their 10-yard line. Sure, field goal. You got 4th-and-1 with just 20 seconds to go, one timeout. And you go for it. That's so silly. I mean, the likelihood is that you're going to wind up, even if you make the first down, you're probably going to wind up kicking the field goal anyway. Right. So take it right now. Why run it? Why run a fourth down play and maybe lose those 3 points? It was bold, but it was foolish. And Nick's been making a lot of those kinds of decisions. Now, it contributed to them losing a game Monday night against the Falcons. They managed to salvage yesterday's game that they easily could have lost. But I think right now, if I'm Nick, you know, I got to take a step back and say, you know, maybe I have to reevaluate how we're doing things here. Now, because it's a little bit different, Steve, because Nick has really fully handed off the play calling to Kellen Moore.
Yes.
And he said at during training camp, he said, listen, it's a new way of doing business around here. I'm going to be kind of the CEO head coach. You know, I'm going to let Kellen run the offense. I'm going to let Vic Fangio run the defense, and I'm going to be the overall head coach, which sometimes, you know, he's not controlling every play call. But I think he said yesterday that call down, that 4th-and-1 that he handed off to Saquon and they got stopped and lost the field goal, he said, you know, that was my call. And no matter who made it, it was the wrong call. And in a game like that, it could have cost you dearly.
Yeah, because I think that's an interesting answer, because the key part of it, as you said, every team's different. He has different personnel than 2 years ago. Right? It's what you're capable of doing. You can't force it along the way. You have to let things be organic. And something about analytics, and I'm with you all the way on the analytics. Look, analytics are useful. I'm not saying they're not. But you have to use your own football or whatever sport common sense with it. Analytics will tell you you should be going for it on every fourth down. It's 4th-and-2 at your own 11-yard line. You're going for it. No, you're not. You're punting.
Right.
But they tell you you have to go for it on all of them. That's what you're dealing with here in terms of what that chart allegedly says.
No question. No question, Steve. And part of the problem is that if you go into, and not just the Eagles, but into the front offices of 32 NFL teams, they have like whole wings of their buildings are taken up by analytics people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people walking around in white lab coats, you know, that spend all day at the computer, you know, and feeding numbers and stats and crunching numbers in computers, that will come up with all of this stuff. That if it's 4th-and-6, when you're inside this yard line, you go for it because you can make it 60% of the time, and if you make it, then you will wind up scoring a touchdown 52%. They'll give you all of these numbers. And it has become, I don't want to say it's infected from all this, but let's put it this way, it's there. And the people that own the teams are the ones that put it there. And so if you're the coach, if you're the guy on the sidelines with the visor and the headphones, and you're the guy that's making the decisions, you know, you've come up through the game making decisions one way, based on what your gut tells you in a situation. And you're right, everything is contingent on the opponent, the field position, the playing conditions, how your guys are doing, or do you have your full complement of offensive linemen? If maybe you're missing one guy, maybe that changes everything. There's all that stuff that from a football sense has to factor into these decisions. But you have these other people who have a lot of influence and a lot of sway in your organization that are looking at their numbers in front of them and saying, okay, well, yeah, we got to go for it here. What? He's not? Oh, that's a mistake. And if it doesn't work out, then the coach knows he's going to walk into the office on Monday, and somebody's going to be saying, the boss wants to see you. And then you're going to go in, and then they're going to lay the spreadsheet out in front of you and circle that and say, well, why didn't you go for it there? You know, and that's, And that's a conversation no coach wants to have. But frankly, that's the kind of thing that all of these guys are dealing with. And does it get in the way of what you're talking about, you know, whether you want to call, you know, going by your gut or just old football, old school football, all those things, does it get in the way of making those decisions? Sure it does. And sometimes you can live with it, but sometimes you can't. And I think that sometimes, and you've seen Sirianni now in the last two games, get tripped up on that kind of thing, because I think he's trying to serve the analytics people, maybe at the expense of the team. Now, he got away with it yesterday, but he didn't get away with it against Atlanta.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You can't have the career that you've had if you always did everything by the numbers. There are how many times, probably countless times, you could give me where your gut or your feel for the game led you in the direction that ended up in a great story. The best ones are the ones, to me, that have a feel for it and understand how and when to use the numbers and how and when to go with your gut feel. Because, I mean, that's what a big part of what's made your career so great.
Yeah, I don't know if that's exactly analogous, but I know kind of what you're saying. I remember having this discussion with some, we're now into a whole new generation of coaches. I mean, these guys are all young. It's a new breed of coaches. It's a new breed of general managers, really. It's a new breed of everything, frankly.
Yep.
But I remember when the NFL passed the 2-point conversion. We're going back a few years now, but when they finally okayed the 2-point conversion. And I was still in the newspaper business, and I talked to a bunch of the head coaches. Said, "Okay, now you got this. You got the 2-point conversion. Now, how do you feel about it?" And they all said, "We're not doing that." You know, I mean, yeah, you can put the rule in there, but I mean, telling me that I can go for two is like telling me I can eat snails for breakfast. Oh yeah, I can, but I don't want to. You know, they're going to play the game the way they want to play the game. I mean, if you want to call it old school, fine, that's old school. But now, you know, those guys, you know, the Schottenheimers and the Shulas, and they're gone now. And now you've got a lot of younger coaches that are in there making those decisions, and they're more amenable and they're more open to the analytic style of football. But I do think that sometimes it gets in the way.
Mm-hmm. I watched teams chase points all weekend after going for two. That's me.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, Steve, I remember in the game that they lost Monday night against Atlanta. Yeah. Somebody said, you know, they wound up losing the game, and I said they should. You know, that second possession they had that long drive that took it all the way down the field, and they go for it on fourth down, they get stopped, and they get nothing. Uh-huh. And I said just take the points. Don't get cute here. Look, you had a nice long drive, scoreless game. Let's take the points. Just take the points. And people were saying to me afterwards, "Oh, that's easy for you to say. You're looking back at a 1-point loss, and you're talking about 3 points from back in the first." No, I said, no, it's not a second guess. I was saying it at the time.
Yes.
Because I just think, see, when you get into this analytics thing, I think sometimes the people have to understand the psychology of football and the psychology of players. And if your offense has taken the ball and they've had whatever that was, 14, 15 plays, where you took it all the way down the field, just take the points. You know, don't do all that and have the team move the ball all the way down the field and walk off the field with nothing. I mean, that's deflating for a team. So, okay, take the 3 points and be happy with it. You know, did that make the difference in the game? I don't really think so. But still, at the time and even in the aftermath, I thought it was a mistake.
Lombardi in the 1960 NFL championship game, "I should have kicked the field goal." He says, "I'm never not going to take the points again."
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's really the, you know, I just always feel that that's the way to go. I mean, if you get into a situation early in the game, in the first quarter, just take the points. I mean, I think that's almost, to me, that's almost a universal rule. Now, you get into the game, you're into the second half.
That's right.
The other team is scoring points like crazy. Your defense isn't holding up. You're into a back-and-forth kind of game where points are absolutely critical, and you say, okay, 3 points isn't going to do it for me here. I got to gamble. I got to go for the touchdown.
Yep.
That's a different situation. You know, the game, you now understand where the game's going. You understand what the other team is doing, and I think the calculus changes at that point. But in the first quarter, in a scoreless game, you've had a long drive, you're in position to take the 3 points, just take the 3 points. I mean, to me, I just think when you overthink that kind of stuff, you're just going to get yourself in trouble.
Time, score, situation. Hey, always, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. We could have gone on for a couple hours. Not what you wanted to do, but I would have.
Hey, always a pleasure to talk to you, Steve. Anytime. Take care.
The great Hall of Famer, Ray Dittinger. This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is having their fall kickoff blitz. Savings of up to $12,416 and financing as low as 0%. Score a great deal on the award-winning 2024 Ford Bronco Sport, and SMC has 18 in stock, priced from as low as $29,965. Sunbury Motors is going to give you a Hail Mary of a deal on over 50 2024 Ford Escapes, priced as low as $27,915. Plus, get 1.9% financing for 60 months. SMC is the Hall of Fame of Ford F-150s, with 35 available, with discounts of over $12,000, and they are slashed to the lowest price of the season, starting at only $48,859. Don't let the play clock run out on these awesome deals, as the final drive of savings ends Monday, September 30th. Sunbury Motors is a fifth-generation Ford dealer, proudly owned by the Mertz family for over a century.